And welcome to the Sandler Training Hour. This is our entrepreneur radio segment of our program. I get to interview local and regional entrepreneurs and hear the stories that they have to tell about how they have developed their business. What do their business accomplish? How do they get to help their clients? And I'm just so thrilled to have one of my favorite people, one of my clients, Susan Graham, with us. Susan is an attorney. She runs the firm Senior Edge Legal. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for inviting me.
Susan's been a guest on our program before, and if you're a longtime listener, you probably remember her from a couple of years ago. But for those who haven't heard you before, Susan, share a little bit about Senior Edge Legal. What is your area of expertise?
Jim, I represent people who are concerned about planning their future, and my clients are retired people or people anticipating retirement.
And you know, I think you work in an industry where none of us really take seriously the brevity of life. And as I talk to business owners, one of the questions I'm asking them is, so how prepared are you for the unavoidable future where we all at some point pass away? How prepared is your estate? I am shocked, Susan, at how many people say, you know, I have a will, and when is the last time you looked at it? Well, you know, it's been a long time, and it's one of those areas that I think if you aren't ready, you can get yourself into a lot of problems. What are some of the challenges that you've seen people have because of a failure to prepare for estate planning?
Well, when I do public speaking, I start off with a paper bag over my head, and I tell everybody this is their approach to aging and dying. And it's true. And the problem for failure to plan is it's much more expensive for the family. It's the wrong people end up in charge. It creates family conflict. It's just a total mess.
Yeah.
And if people would plan ahead, they get to protect their assets, protect their independence, assure that they have the right people handling things, reduce family conflict. It just is so much easier for everyone and gives them peace of mind that things are in the proper order.
And your business focuses exclusively on this area of expertise. Susan, why do you think it is people are so, I don't know, hesitant to really plan for their death?
Well, this is United States of America. Everybody's independent. Everybody can manage on their own. They don't need any help. They won't reach out for help until it's a disaster.
Yeah.
And it's easy to ignore until everything goes wrong.
Yeah.
So it's a joy to be able to help clients plan ahead so that they can avoid these catastrophes that are coming. The guarantee I can give everybody is you're going to die.
That is so true. 100% of us. And if you're not ready, it's guaranteed that your family is going to be left with a lot to sort out. And I think we do our family a great service when we take time to really pre-plan some of the basic things like, and full disclosure here, Susan has helped my wife, Joan, and I with our estate planning. And Susan, one of the things I really appreciated about what you did is you made it so simple for us to understand how we can, through legal vehicles like establishing a trust and all of the things that go with that, how we can pass our estate onto our kids with a minimal amount of tax burden on them, as well as falling into the trap of, I think the term is probate. Explain to us what that is about.
Yeah, probate is when somebody dies and we have a dead person's name on a titled asset, real property, a bank account, a brokerage account. And what the law says is when someone dies, we've got to figure out who has the power to sign on behalf of the dead person to be able to gather up the assets, protect them, and distribute them out where they're supposed to go. And we call that person a personal representative. Here in Idaho, they're called executor, administrators, other places. So probate means when someone dies, somebody's got to step up and say, oops, that happened. Now we need to take care of the details. And that person would be a petitioner with the court asking to be appointed as personal representative. They have a will, says in the will who they want. If they don't have a will, then the Idaho legislature has figured out who gets to do that. There's another version of probate, and that's if somebody becomes incapacitated mentally or physically, can't contract. And to me, that's worse than dying, because we've got a system for how we handle the dying. But when somebody becomes incapacitated, if they don't have a proper plan in place, then we have to go to court again and get the judge to appoint someone to be able to sign on the incapacitated person.
And I'm guessing anytime you're involving a court of law, there's going to be expenses that are really unnecessary if you have provided instructions beforehand. So explain that basic process.
Well, if the person's incapacitated, which, by the way, the statistics are horrible. Once you pass 65, you have a 70% chance to need care before you die in your home, assisted living, or nursing homes. And then it's who can step up and do that for you. So if you do proper planning with financial powers of attorney and health powers of attorney, and for some people, a revocable trust, you can avoid the need of a conservatorship and guardianship. Those are the proceedings that occur in the probate court when someone's incapacitated. The conservator is someone who handles the money for the incapacitated person, and the guardian is the one who makes the health and housing decisions. Those proceedings are cumbersome, and you have to report to the court at least annually what you're doing with the money when you're appointed as a conservator and guardian.
So this is something that is not only going to take time, but also money. Is there any guess at what kind of investment you've seen people make if they didn't plan properly?
For conservatorship and guardianship here in Ada County, and statewide, they're very expensive and very time-consuming. The law requires that the incapacitated person have an attorney. Even if you've been married to your spouse for 60 years, there will be a separate attorney for the incapacitated spouse.
Wow.
Then the petitioner, the healthy spouse or child or friend, they have an attorney. The court also appoints oftentimes a third attorney, that's called the visitor, who goes around and talks to everybody and makes a recommendation to the court as to what they think is the best. Then there's a doctor that gets hired who does an evaluation.
Wow.
Then you have the judge, so you've got these five professionals. It usually costs, if people aren't fighting about it, $5,000 to $10,000.
Yeah.
The worst one I was involved in was over $100,000 in attorney's fees to get through this, because it was a second marriage and the children of the incapacitated man were unhappy with what the second wife was doing.
Wow.
And then once you get appointed, then you have to file at least once a year an accounting showing what you're doing with the money if you were the one appointed as a conservator. And if you say it's none of your business because we've been married for 50 years, the healthy spouse will be fired and an independent person will be appointed to manage the family finances. So it's a nightmare.
It is a nightmare.
It's designed to protect the incapacitated people because everybody steals from them. But what's happened, in my personal opinion, is it's made it hard for the good people, and the crooks are still going to find some ways to weasel through it.
No, that's a great point. And so I see what you mean about dying is more favorable to being incapacitated, because that just opens a whole new can of worms. I'm guessing there's a similar, maybe not as extreme, investment required, even if somebody passes away and there's no real instructions on how to handle the estate, is there?
That's correct. If someone dies and they haven't done any planning at all, the Idaho legislature has adopted a rule in the Idaho Code that says exactly where the property is to be distributed. So if you haven't figured it out for yourself, the legislature has taken care of that for you.
The other thing that in you taking my wife and I through the process that really surprised me was how much, and I'll give you my layman's perspective and you can help us sort out my real question here, but one of the factors was by establishing a trust and putting our assets in a trust, it allowed those to be sheltered against the cost of having to liquidate that trust. And I think there was like a 5-year time frame. Take us through that process.
I think what you're doing is combining a couple of questions into one question.
I'm sure I am.
When you do a revocable trust, it's like you're setting up a little business. And if you use that as a basis for estate planning, what you do is you change the title out of your individual name. So now it'd be Jim and Joan trustees. They're the money manager of the trust, of the Jim and Joan Trust. Mm. And so you do that with your house, and you do that with your cabin and your brokerage account and your mutual fund. And the ones who can sign on behalf of that trust is the trustee, the original money manager. That's you and Joan. Mm. But it probably says in there, if you get too sick to do it or you resign or you're dead, you've got a backup to sign.
Mm.
So the assets are owned by the trust. That's really you. You use your Social Security number as the tax ID number. You put money in or take money out whenever you want. But when you can't function anymore, then the backup money manager might be your oldest child. And all they do is, if you resign, you just resign and they sign a paper that says they'll take the job, and we file that at the courthouse and they're instantly in charge.
Mm.
Or if you're demented, too ill to resign, or you're in a car wreck and you're a mess and you can't resign, then we get a doctor's statement that says, yeah, you're a mess and you can't do the work, and you're the person you've nominated, your oldest child, says says, I agree, I'll take the job, we file that at the court, they're instantly in charge. Mm. So we eliminate that conservatorship and guardianship proceeding. And if you drop over dead, or the day you drop over dead, again, they would get a death certificate for you and a death certificate for Joan, and they'd sign a paper that says, yeah, they're dead, I agree, I'll take the job, we file that at the courthouse, they're instantly in charge. So we avoid the death probate as well.
Mm. And then if somehow, I think Medicare, Medicaid plays into this, if you were incapacitated, what is some of the advice that you've given your clients to help make sure their assets are protected there?
That's a very simple question, and it's a very complex answer. And you sort of alluded to that with your five-year question in the earlier comment. Okay, when somebody, what we're talking about is if somebody needs long-term residential care in their home, assisted living, or nursing home, in their home, it costs $20, $25 an hour for a bath aide or somebody to come in, and it costs $11,000 to $16,000 a month for 24-hour care in your home. And then assisted living means you go to a nice facility and you pay an average of $4,500 to $6,000 a month for a nice apartment. They provide the meals and they give you some help with bathing and dressing and sorting out your pills. And then if that doesn't work anymore, then you go to skilled nursing care, and that's $8,000 to $10,000 a month. Hmm. The problem is, how do you pay for all this stuff? So you pay for it out of pocket until you run out of money. You pay for it with long-term care insurance, and then you go to the government programs. And that's what I understood you to allude to. Mm-hmm. So there are three government programs that help some with the long-term residential care: Medicare, Medicaid, and VA. And so you have to be careful how you handle your assets for qualifying for those benefits. Medicare is a health insurance program sponsored by the federal government, and they'll pay a maximum of 100 days for residential care. But you have to have been admitted to a hospital for 3 or more days and then discharged to a rehab facility, and then they'll pay 100% for the first 20 days in the Elks or someplace else, and then a portion for the next 80 days. But our government has no money, so they can't balance the budget, but they're doing their best. They've cut the social safety nets. One of the ways they've done that is you don't get admitted to the hospital. You're there for observation, even though you've been there 10 days, and Medicare won't pay for it, or you're not there for 3 days. They whip you in and get you out fast, so you're only there for 2 days. And then there's another benefit that's called Medicaid, and this is a very generous program to married people, but the rules on that are very complex. I would just strongly encourage someone to go talk to a certified elder law attorney if they want to know how to qualify for those benefits. Same thing on the VA.
And I think you're right about the complexity of the situation. And one of the things that, again, I really appreciated, Susan, about your work with us is how you were able to take as much time as we needed to understand. And I didn't want to understand a lot. I'm more of a big picture person. But just to get an understanding in a simple format of how can something that is this complex really be resolved. And what I walked away after engaging your services with was a tremendous sense of maybe a peace of mind, just knowing that. And I was able to take to my kids, hey, here is our estate plan. You put it on a jump drive for us so that they each had access. We have clearly spelled out who does what, and we know that when that time comes for us to pass, it's already been decided. And instead of having to struggle through who's going to do what, it's call Susan Graham and her team, and you will just help my kids walk through that process. So I do agree with your suggestion. Reach out. I would selfishly say reach out to Susan Graham. So Susan, give your contact information in case someone would like to reach out to you and pick your brain a little bit and find out a little more about estate planning for themselves.
Yeah, we don't charge for that first initial consultation with people. When someone calls and wants to talk to me about estate planning, we ask them a few questions to see if we are possible a good fit, and if not, then we refer them to another source that might be a better service to them. But if they would call my office, which is 208-344-0375, then they'll talk to one of my people, and we'll figure out if it makes sense for us to sit down and talk about their estate plan. They could also go to my website, which is senioredgelegal.com, senioredgelegal.com. And there's a place on that website to contact her office.
Awesome. One more thing before I let you go, Susan. You know, the government is constantly in a in a state of flux. There are a lot of changes just that are occurring even now in elder law. What are some of the concerns you might have for our listeners to stay up on if they do have, maybe they've spent some time in the past doing some estate planning, but it's been a while?
I encourage people to review their estate plan every 3 years, whether they think they need to or not. The law changes, their health, their relationship with people change, their money changes. So something's bound to change within that time period. And the only time you want these papers is when everything goes wrong. Somebody becomes incapacitated or dies. And thankfully, nobody tells us when those days are, because if they did, we'd wait till about a month before, if even that soon, and deal with it. So the other thing would be to, I put out a blog twice a month. It's every other week. 1 week, it's a short 1 or 2 minute video on a subject relating to estate planning. And then the other 2 weeks later, I put out a written, usually it's one page article that I write that again talks about the subjects of estate planning. So if you want to sign up for my blog, that will let you know at least of any significant current changes that may be occurring in this area of the law.
Awesome.
And if you want to sign up for my blog, again, you can just go to my website or call my office. And the office number is 208-344-0375, or the website, just type in senioredgelegal.com and you'll get there.
Susan Graham, you've been an awesome guest and what a great resource for our community. Susan and her team not only are great attorneys, but they're also great givers. They give back to the community. Really appreciate, Susan, all that you do. And thank you so much for being on our show today.
Oh, thank you, Jim. It's certainly been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.